Renaissance Podcast presents Floatworks co-founder Ed Hawley. Isolation chambers or flotation tanks give us a sensory deprivation experience you can't find anywhere else in nature.
What is floating?
Ed talks about how he left his life in IT sales to combine his passion with his entrepreneurial skills. We also discuss the physical and mental benefits to floating and some of the science behind it. Go to renaissancepodcast.com for more podcasts and information about mindfulness.
Yeah, man, thanks for doing this.
It's wicked. It's good fun. Happy to be here.
And when we first met, you'd actually reached out to me via email for opening day.
How did that happen?
You heard one of the podcasts. It was either I wrote a blog that the podcast was attached to, and you reached out to it in response to that.
Was it Chris or was it Tim or Matt or one of those guys? Because I remember just being like, "Oh, this is awesome."
I think it was Chris actually.
Yeah, so he did all of the. So he is more like, how can I put this? His attention to detail is greater than mine.
Yeah.
So. Stuff like that, he's like, I've got an amazing list of people we need to get in on the opening day, whereas I'll probably come up with one. Yeah. I'll be like, yeah, look at this, I've just seen something randomly on a billboard or whatever it is. Whereas he's like quite systematic and he had a huge list of people to get in. Mm. But then the only podcast, I think we did a couple of podcasts, we did one with you, but the one we did with you was wicked, wasn't it? Yeah. Can you remember that? It went off on a lot of tangents.
Yeah.
We had Matt Strudwick in there, who's one of the brother of the founder of the Floatworks.
Yeah.
And he's an interesting guy. He's really clever and he can talk forever.
Yeah, well, we had a fantastic time that day, you know, just to come and experience.
Yeah.
Because I've been a fan of floating, ever first hearing it through Joe Rogan, which I'm sure a lot of people, when they come to your centre.
You know what I mean? So we have something whereby we look at where all of our referrals are coming from.
Yeah.
And we originally had things like another customer, social media, Google, and we've added Joe Rogan in now as well as a referral option when you say where you heard of the Floatworks. Just because there's loads. Yeah. Generally, obviously.
Is that the majority or?
No. The majority is either a referral from another customer or Google, because float tanks are becoming more popular.
Yeah.
So people Google float tanks and we're top of SEO for London. So that's where a lot of our business comes from. But generally speaking, well, it was big enough that we had to add in. Like I say, Chris is more detail-oriented than I am. He would tell you the numbers, but it's big enough that he had to add in an option.
A category.
For people to do that. I'd have to ask him, but it's quite a lot. Yeah. And generally, it's 25, actually. It's probably 20-year-olds to 35-year-old men, basically.
Yeah.
They generally know who Joe Rogan is. Mm. And then Tim Ferriss, Dave Asprey.
Yeah, big fans.
Those kind of guys, yeah. Because Ferris talks about it as well, and Dave Asprey talks about it.
And I just remember, you know, going down to the float, we spoke afterwards, and then since then, you know, developed a good friendship. And you know, I just really like it when a couple of young guys get together that are motivated and, you know, following a passion of theirs.
Yeah.
And then becoming successful at it.
Yeah, and also, I think because of my previous job, I was working in the city. In IT outsourcing, and you know, I'm around loads of IT sales, right? You know what that's about.
Yeah.
So I'm working with a load of young guys. We're all having a laugh. Mm-hmm. We're all similar age, but there's a big difference between that. It's like I was saying to you when I came in here and saw this studio. A lot of people say they're going to do something, and not many people actually do it. Yeah. But when you actually do something, and when you meet someone else who's actually said they're going to do something, they do something. That's where you have a bit of a connection because you know it takes a lot of time, energy, effort and balls, but then you also know that the rewards are absolutely massive.
Yeah.
Mm. So you have something that you can share with a little bit because you're like, yeah, it's good, isn't it? Like, we did it. You know, yeah, I'm not saying we did it. You've not made it, but like you're doing something
on
and
the
I'm
path,
doing something.
At least,
yeah. And like you say, you can't think to yourself, it's a funny thing because you can't think to yourself, oh, I've not made it. Like I try to stop myself from thinking like that. Like made it for me is 10 organic coffee and juice smoothie bars and 20 float centres and me walking around with an iPad being some kind of Dragon's Den character talking to people who've got businesses.
Yeah.
But actually, that's bullshit because now I've got a team of 8 people. I live with my best mate and my business partner and we're always strategising and planning stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm getting much better at just going, well, hang on a minute, actually, there's no such thing as having made it. Look at what you're doing.
You have to keep checking yourself.
You have to keep checking yourself. Yeah. But I do that a lot more now.
Yeah.
Even if I just get up, go to the gym, go down to my float center, talk to my staff, chat to some customers, have a little meeting about what property areas we're going to look at for the next float center, and then go and do jiu-jitsu. Sometimes I just look back on that day and I'm like, fuck, that is amazing.
Yeah.
And 2 years ago, that would be my obsession. Like, I've got to get to that point where I'm doing that. And now that I'm here, I'm looking at the next property and I'm looking at opening another business and I'm looking at how much revenue can we turn over per year if we've got six float centers. So you have to be really careful to remember that you're actually going through, you're already living your dream, if that makes sense. Well, it's easy to forget.
Well, actually, one of my questions was related to that. You know, the Alan Watts story where he talks about going, you know, success in the eyes of your parents, where they say, go to college and then university and be successful there. So that will allow you to go get a job where you'll be happy, and then you climb up the ladder to promotion and then either CEO, you know, which is, you know, your co-founder of, you know, Floatworks. Mm. So getting to that stage, you know, a lot of people would assume, okay, now you've made it, you're happy. You know, and that's why it's very interesting to get, you know, for you to say, I have to keep checking myself and I have to keep reminding myself that.
Well, a good example. So I actually had a bit of a vision when I was a bit more immature. I don't mean a vision as in a vision that came to me. I mean, I had a consistent thing that I thought about. I used to think, because I was obsessed with boxing, still am, and I used to think, I'm going to have a pimp flat, for want of a better phrase, and I'm going to have a punch bag, and I'm going to be in there, I'm going to be able to do my punch bag in my flat, it's going to overlook London, I'm going to see skyline, really immature, really, and very materialistic, and you know, which is, you know, I'm not ashamed to say that is how I thought.
I think a lot of us sort of grew up with those sort of
when
ideas.
You're younger.
Yeah.
I mean, you just...
That's the definition of success, isn't it? You know, when you tick those boxes. Yeah.
Exactly. And, you know, I was actually realizing the other day, because I have got a nice flat and it does overlook London, and I was training and looking at London the other day, and I thought, shit, like this is... And I actually now don't value it.
Mm.
And that's not because I'm ungrateful or because I've got complacent. It's because I've realized that actually, I actually got that flat because it's so close to the float center.
Yeah.
And it's convenient. And I haven't put any furniture in it. It doesn't really feel like a home particularly because it's not my priority right now. My priority is a place to sleep, which has a gym nearby, which is close to my business and which is, you know, really, really fucking convenient, which is what I've got. But actually, by default, it's actually the thing that I was obsessing about like 5 years ago. Yeah. And now I'm not actually that interested in it because I've realized that's not that important.
No.
Well, the really important thing is what we were just saying, like saying you're going to do something and doing it and being passionate about it. Because I could have still had this flat and worked in IT sales, but I'd have hated my job.
Mm.
Yeah. Do you know what I mean? So it doesn't actually matter, these things.
No.
Yeah. It's what you're doing that matters.
Yeah.
And being able to, like you say, I don't want to, it feels like a, you know, it feels like I'm doing this on purpose, but it is about being present.
Yeah,
it is, because as I say, it's really, really easy for me to forget that actually now I'm living the dream that I dreamt a year ago, and I'm living this other dream that I dreamt 6 years ago that I completely forgot about. Mm-hmm. But it's easy to forget both of them in one fell swoop. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Very, very easy, because there's always a new dream.
Yeah,
but that's fruitless and it's a thankless task to always be thinking of that new dream. It won't make you happy.
Yeah.
So that's
So why float tanks and why isolation chambers? What? How did you decide that would be your career?
So me and Chris, my business partner, were both working in the city. And we were always, like I said, when we were a bit younger, a bit more immature, you know, going out, partying hard, going to lots of raves, working really hard. I was boxing, he was playing football. Typical candidates for burnout. And also, you know, quite shallow, really. I don't think he'd mind me saying that. And then the dream originally was like, let's start our own business because we can work forever in the city and earn X. If we start our own business, we'll earn Y.
Yeah.
And that means we can have even bigger toys. Yeah.
More of those, yeah.
which is, as I say, is stupid, but that's the way we felt. And that's kind of, I think, what kicked us off on that path. Also wanting autonomy. You know, you know what it's like, you go to work.
You've got answers to somebody.
And also, I feel like my personality is that I don't like if I see things that aren't working, I get quite frustrated and annoyed. I'm like, let's fix this. This is bullshit. Yeah. So if you're working for a company where they just won't.
Constrained by the system or whatever the...
Exactly. Going on and they don't care.
Yeah.
That's the problem. No one gives a shit. Because they're like, well, I'm picking up this much wages. I need to make this guy happy. This is a huge company. Who gives a shit if these processes that Ed's screwing about are better or worse? No one cares. But I actually did care. Yeah. I'm just naturally, intrinsically care.
Yeah.
I want the money and I want the nice toys and all that stuff, but also I get pissed off when people are lazy. I get pissed off when things are inefficient. I just do.
Yeah.
And that was grinding my gears basically. And it was his as well. And then we were like, well, you know, we can get rid of all of that and we can start our own business. However, I used to work in recruitment, which is even worse than IT sales. And no, they're all great. They're all fantastic. But recruitment actually isn't. Recruitment's really bad. That was 8 in the morning till 8 at night, smashing the phones all day, sleeping under my desk.
Wow.
Going out and getting pissed, coming back, sleeping under my desk, hitting the phones again. Really cutthroat atmosphere.
Yeah.
Everybody's face on a board on the front of the office in a league table as to who had closed the most deals.
So it's all
new recruits being told, eat this sponge cake in 1 minute and you have £200, £50 notes, impossible task.
Yeah.
And you get like some 19, 20
year old
kid.
Wall Street.
It was. And it was shit. I left after 6 months. Mm. But where was I going with that? So yeah, so when we were looking at businesses to start, we know a guy who actually runs a recruitment company, which isn't like that. The culture's not like that. It's still recruitment, which is a hard sales game, but it's not like that. And we were like, right, well, I've been in sales. Chris is an amazing management consultant. He could structure the business side. I could run the sales teams. We could do recruitment. And it felt wrong, obviously. Mm. We were like, and that would make us loads of money and that would be a business and we'd be free to make our own decisions. But it just felt wrong. And then we looked at an IT company. I actually started looking at people that could run that IT company with me and Chris, and then that kind of fell apart for various reasons. Then we looked at, we've got a few properties that we bought when we were in the city that we rent out. We thought, right, let's expand this and have a property business. Mm. And you know, none of it got us excited. It just isn't exciting. It wasn't a passion. It wasn't what we cared about. At the same time, as us kind of going through these motions of trying to figure out what we're going to do, I was in hospital twice through just caning it, basically. Mm-hmm. Like training for
exhaustion.
Boxing. The first time was a kidney infection, which I just shouldn't have got. Yeah. They were like, young men don't get kidney infections. What's wrong with you? They took a look at my lifestyle in terms of the partying, the lack of sleep, training, working hard. They're like, mate, you're just gonna ruin your body. Mm. I didn't learn that time. And then it happened again. I got a cut on my finger, which got infected, and it traced all the way up my arm and towards my body. Bacterial infection, because my immune system was just fucked. Because I was just running it all into the ground. I looked fine from the outside. I was training really hard, partying really hard, closing deals, and my inside of my body was just like, this is ridiculous, you're gonna fall apart. And so that happened to me twice, and my business partner, similar, like always felt run down, always felt ill, his back was in bits from leaning over a desk all day. So we were both trying to change our lives at this point, eat healthy, not go out as much, not drink excessively, don't take drugs, just do all the things that obviously are going to take the edge off. That's when he found floating. So his physiotherapist said, go and have a float. He went and did it, and it just basically made his back feel fantastic, but also he noticed that, and we can get to this, what happens, but he noticed that he just felt noticeably less stressed when he got out, which is the goal. It's what we were trying to do, trying to reduce it. So he told me to go and do it. He's much more, what's the word? I don't know. He's just cleverer than I am, right? So he just sees opportunities.
Yeah.
And I was just like, this is cool, floating. I like this. This is amazing. And I went in and did it, had loads of thoughts, like quite profound. I mean, you both floated.
Yeah.
Mm. Did you find that you had thoughts that you perhaps wouldn't have had outside the tank? I mean, or did you? Well, you meditated, didn't you? Right.
The first time I went, I hadn't meditated before, and that was in the old center.
Right.
So when I went down to your float, that was my first time actually going in to meditate, specifically to meditate.
Right.
And so it's not that I had thoughts that I wouldn't usually have, but it just allowed me to be in a great environment to meditate.
Yeah.
And to do that, those concentration exercises.
Yeah. So clearing your mind and calming your mind. So what about you, Anne?
Yes, nothing too profound, actually. It was just, an extension of the meditation. But perhaps because I'd already done meditation for a while. But it was a deeper experience, I think, because of the sensory deprivation. But there wasn't any sort of hallucination or some sort of great insight or some new idea. But it was a good experience.
We are quite familiar.
I think it was familiar with the quieting of the mind.
Of thoughts. When we sit down for our 10-minute daily practice and close our eyes, it's the stream of thoughts that come in, and that's the exercise, trying to notice them.
Yeah.
You know, without the judgment. Taking a breath and then just watching it go.
Mm.
And then you repeat this and repeat this. So we understand how crazy the mind is. And so when I went in there to meditate, I knew that as soon as I got in there and I closed my eyes, that's it. The thoughts would come in, which was fine for me, which was exciting because that's what allows me to practice.
Mm.
You know, having said that, as I've been going more often, what I tend to do towards the end, I think we spoke about this a little bit, is that if I have something specific on my mind, like a problem that I want to solve, towards the end of this session, I will then focus my attention on trying to solve that problem.
Yeah.
Especially badminton, if there's a certain move, if I go over it again and again without interruption, so every time I'm distracted, like it's getting too hot in here, or you know, I can feel the salt in my wound, then at that moment I can take a breath and just go back to the technique, focus on. So I think it's just overall, it's a great way to practice concentration.
So I think this is interesting, so we can get into this. I'll try and finish wrap this story off real quick, because I'm kind of babbling on. But basically, so the first time I went in, and we can get into the science behind floating and meditation and clearing your mind and lucid dreaming and all these things.
Yeah.
But the first time I went in, I just felt like there was zero. I was very up for it, you know. I was like, yes, let's delve into my consciousness. This is a sensory deprivation tank. I've heard about it on Joe Rogan.
Yeah.
Let's get in there. Got in there and did have some quite profound thoughts just about what I want to do with my life, what motivates me.
Mm.
A lot of the shit that I talked about earlier, let's get lots of toys and a big flat and earn more money than this guy and party really hard and meet loads of girls, all this crap. Yeah. A lot of that kind of, I saw through that a little bit for the first time. maybe for the first time. but yeah, it did do that. And I was like, oh, it's amazing. But as I say, Chris being a bit more insightful than me is like, well, hang on a minute. I've actually had a look at this from a business model perspective. I've done a few numbers. Yeah. I've looked at the West Coast of America. There's a franchise over there called Urban Float, which is doing really well. That's popped up. No one's doing this well in London. This can be done properly here. We can franchise this out.
Yeah.
This could be a real cool thing to do, purely from a business perspective, which is what initially, because I wasn't quite ready at that point to commit to doing something for the right reasons, actually. Mm. So then I was like, all right, if it works as a business, this sounds interesting.
Yeah.
And he felt the same. Mm. That's what was motivating us. But that's completely changed.
Mm.
So now, as a result of starting to float, meditating a lot more, living a lot cleaner, thinking about things like exercise in a completely different way, all these things, thinking about just being more open-minded about how I manage my life and what I'm going to do with my life and not actually obsessing over, I've got to have this, I've got to have that. Even things like, you know, I've got to get married or I've got to have kids or I've got to have a nice car or anything.
Yeah.
Not obsessing about any of those things and getting so much joy out of having all these people coming down to this float centre and being happy.
Yeah.
And my whole perspective has completely changed.
Yes.
But the way I got into it, it was actually through a bit of
business
typical business motivation. Yeah.
As you said earlier, you know, we've got X at the moment, but well, through this we could get Y, which is exactly more partying, you know, bigger apartment, etc. Yeah. But actually, it's the shift in your perspective.
It's completely changed.
Bizarre.
I mean, I'm still a business person. I still think about these things. Yeah. I still enjoy them.
Yeah.
I like negotiating, and I like numbers, and I like thinking about the big vision, and I like kind of doing the best I can possibly do. But it's not that typical kind of capitalist, I just want to make this bigger and make more money, is not the main driver anymore. It's because I want to do cool stuff and I want to find out more stuff, like about who we are, what's the human condition. And once you go and start on float center, it's unavoidable. I mean, obviously I meet guys like you and we start talking about these things, but then I've got like psychedelic explorers who have written papers on LSD and ayahuasca, and you get loads of hippies coming into the float center who are like the absolute opposite to what I've ever been, and open your mind up to a different world altogether, which I've delved right into, and that's fascinating as well. And you just see this whole big spectrum, And I think it's just a big shift. And it's made me a lot happier.
Yeah, well, that's, you know, that's one of the main reasons that I do it is, you know, the meditation, it does lead to happiness.
Mm.
So, you know, what would, if I were to ask you, what would your top tips, given that you've spoken to so many people after their float,
yeah,
and kind of have, you know, an archive of all the responses, you know, what are the, I guess we can begin with, you know, the top tips for someone that's considering about doing a float.
Yeah.
And also, you know, the top kind of feedback you get as far as people's experience from floating.
So floating is the practice of getting into a pool or a tank. We have tanks, which are 9 feet by 7 feet. So they're very large. You're getting into a solution that is Epsom salt, some water. And there's half a ton of Epsom salt dissolved into this tank of water. Mm-hmm. So you float effortlessly because there's half a ton of salt in there. It's more than the Dead Sea. And the water is heated to skin temperature, which is 35 degrees. Some people 34.5, some people 35.5. Mm-hmm. And you have a light in the tank, which you can turn off when you're ready, so you can't see anything. It's a pitch black room, and the tank's light proof. And you have earplugs in. So you're lying suspended in salt water, mm-hmm, floating in thin air effectively, because you can't feel the water because it's the same temperature as your skin.
Yeah. Mm.
And you can't see anything and you can't feel anything and you have no sense of balance. So all of the sensory cortices effectively in your brain, mm, don't have anything to do. You can't see, you can't feel, you've got no balance. And all you can hear, because people say you can't hear either, you can, because mm-hmm, you can hear everything that's going on inside your own body. You can hear your heartbeat and you can hear your breath. So at the beginning you have 10 minutes of relaxing music. You don't have to, but most people do. If you were about to float for the first time, you would.
Mm.
The lights are on, they're nice blue lights. It's a nice white pod, so it's quite relaxing in there. It's quite big, you feel like you're in a small car. And then you lean over and you turn off the light. After 10 minutes, the music dies down and you're in total blackness and silence and you can't feel anything. And that goes on for 1 hour, and whatever happens in that hour happens. And then at the end, you get 5 minutes of music and you come back to life. So it's been likened to being in the womb again. It's been likened, probably a little bit misleading, but it's been likened to mindfulness and meditation just as a blanket statement,
yeah,
which I think is a bit misleading because they're just different things. I mean, we can get into that. You know, and it's aligned with the whole mind-body movement in the well-being sector. So yoga's £750 million a year in the UK now. Meditation, as you know, is rocketing. I think, didn't Headspace, I think, just got $30 million worth of funding or something?
Well, I know it was valued at around the £30 million,
which is crazy,
pound mark, mm-hmm, yeah.
So we can see that mind-body section of the well-being market is taking off, and for good reason,
because yeah,
people are starting to realise the impact of stress and anxiety, yeah, and all these things, yeah, on quality of life and on physical health as well. So that's where it sits. It sits with all that.
So I just wanted to interrupt on the point of, you know, for good reason, you know, that this whole sort of movement towards taking better care of yourself and,
yeah,
the emphasis away from capitalism, making more money,
mm,
and how that's not working for us, but we have been duped as a society to think, all of us, you know, when you said, you know, quite immature to think that getting a nice car, a nice apartment, those were the goals in life. But it's not really your fault or our fault, because I think that, you know, not blaming the media, society, whatever, I think it's quite natural. It's easy, because those things are quite attractive.
It's, you know, indoctrinated.
Yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. In your friends, you know, even from an early age, you know, a nice pair of trainers would get you more respect than a pair of trainers that had no name.
They were everything.
They were everything. So they were reinforced from an early age, you know, yeah, and later on it would, yeah, be the car.
Yeah.
And then, you know, when you first drive and you go out on a date, you know, the girl would reinforce it by saying, oh, you've got a nice car and this is a nice restaurant. So every aspect of your life reinforces the idea that the more...
So many tangents we could go off on here. Like, yeah, the options are endless.
Options,
like,
yeah.
There are just,
yeah,
roads in all directions.
But the idea that it's not someone's fault. So to say that you're particularly shallow, you know, it's not
really... Yeah.
In a sense that it's because we have been conditioned in that way. But there is something wrong with that. And that's why I suppose that people realise, you know, burnout or that,
yeah,
not necessarily going to fulfil this deep human need for meaning.
Yeah, I do think we've lost our way a bit.
Yeah.
And that sounds really corny and cheesy. And
like, well, that's backed up. I think that's backed up by what Richard Layard in Action for Happiness, you know, the findings, you know, just a brief point about that. GDP has gone up consistently since the 1950s and happiness levels have sort of flat, negligible, I believe is there.
Yeah. Less than 1%.
Less than 1%.
Yeah. And there's loads of stuff like, you know, there's a certain amount of money you can earn that makes you happy, and then everything beyond that doesn't make any difference. No. There's all these studies, and then there's also like, you know, it's kind of like we're survival machines. Mm-hmm. So you are just driven to get food and shelter, and then once that's done, you're driven to get sexual partners, and then once that's done, you're driven to get status, and you know, you're just driven to do these things. But actually, what you would hope is that we'd kind of evolve out of that a little bit. Yeah. But then you look at someone like Donald fucking Trump and you see that there's this swing of people who are just like running off in that direction.
Yeah.
And then I think if you look on the opposite end of the spectrum, you see people who are just almost unrealistic in their expectations of people abandoning that kind of need to survive and need for material goods and, you know, need to just have a bit of fun.
Yeah.
And that's just like, you know, there's two extremes. Yeah. It sounds boring, but like just being somewhere in the center is probably
that's exactly it. Finding balance.
Yeah.
Like I said, you know, if you want to use your mobile phone, like I don't feel ashamed of using my mobile phone if I'm in a restaurant, because the mobile phone is a link to the whole world.
Yeah.
If I want to see images of Mars, I can do that. I want to FaceTime someone. But understand, just like your thoughts, you don't have to respond. You don't have to, every time you have that urge, you don't have to. If you can say, when I want to use Google Maps, or when I need to tell someone I'm running late, or when I can use my phone, I don't have to feel ashamed that I'm using it. Just realize that this is an amazing tool. It's a tool that literally football scores, you know, buy tickets to go Mallorca. Anything that you want to do, you can do on your mobile phone. But understand that you can control yourself. You know, money, you know, there's, if your idea of, you know, success and happiness, having millions and millions, you know, understand that there's a medium where you were talking about that 30 something thousand, we want anything above that. It might not, but understand that even whatever level you are on the socioeconomic scale, that there's a happiness that you can find, you know, maybe through floating, that doesn't involve having, you know, those material things.
And you can find your niche in society. Like you might be dirt poor, but get all of your happiness out of going down the gym and boxing because it's your passion and you love it. And that's the way you want to live. Yeah. You find your niche and you're happy. Mm-hmm. But then also, it's anything to excess. It's probably not a great idea, particularly when you start talking about extreme kind of right wing in capitalism, because you're going to screw everyone else over, or extreme liberal views because you're not going to get anything done. It's not going to be practical. Extreme left wing liberal socialist views. So like, I just think, not to get into politics, but I just think there's all these big swings, and like, actually it sounds really boring, but just be somewhere in the middle. Mm-hmm. Some people are going to feel a bit more comfortable, a bit more to the right, but if you go too far that way, you're going to be an asshole. And some people are going to find it a bit easy to be a bit more to the left, and that's fine, we're all a bit different. But just don't go absolutely mental and go off on an absolute screamer in one direction, because then that's when things, like I say, balance, that's when things just get completely out of whack.
Yeah, can you give me a couple of tips for someone that was to go for their first time floating?
Yeah.
You know, what's some of the things that you learn, and a couple of cool bits of advice?
So I'd say that there is probably, out of 100% of the people that come, you've probably got 20% that do it.
Yeah.
And they come out and they're just like, massive smile plastered across their face. Oh my God, that's probably one of the best things I've ever done in my life. Mm-hmm. I'm going to buy a membership, or I'm going to just buy a 5-pack and I'm going to be back tomorrow. Then you've probably got, you know, like another majority that are just like, that was amazing, that was really cool, I've never done anything like that before, I feel so chilled out, it was great. Then you've got a smaller sort of proportion who are like, God, I'm really not sure about that, I don't really know what to make of it, I felt a little bit weird in there, I couldn't really switch my mind off. They're the sort of people that I like to try and get them back. I'm like, no, come back, try again. And then you've got a really small proportion that are like, I didn't like that, I was claustrophobic in there, I freaked out, you know. And that, to be honest with you, if you're that anxious, then there's probably the things you can do to bring yourself down a few levels so that you're ready to get in the float tank. Yeah. But I'm talking about people who are really suffering.
Yeah.
Because we do, you know, floating is used to address post-traumatic stress in the military in America, and, you know, anxiety, depression, all sorts of things. So we really do get people coming in who know that, and they're in a pretty bad place. So it's natural that you're going to get a few people that, you know. Yeah. But But for the just the person who's coming for the first time, I'd say don't have any expectations. There's no need for any expectations, because whatever expectations you do have may not be met, or it may be completely different. Just accept that you're going to turn off for an hour. And then there are just really simple things like put your earplugs into your ears before you get wet so they don't fall out of your ears inside the float tank. And then you get water on your ears. Dry your face thoroughly so that you're not getting, you imagine you're lying, you can't feel anything, you can't see anything, you can't hear anything. And then a little bit of water starts to trickle down the middle of your head. And you've got, you're lying in a tank full of salt water. So the last thing you want to do is start wiping your eyes and face with your salty hands, because then you're in agony because you've got salt water in your eyes. So there's things like that that ensure you have a challenge-free float in terms of salt water in the eyes and water in the ears. Practicals. But then that's the practical side of things. Then there's another side of things, which is you are now getting into a situation where you've never been like this before. You can't feel, see, hear, there's no balance. And how do you cope with that and deal with that? So physically, you have to allow yourself to relax back into the water. Anyone who does yoga knows that you try and straighten your spine out. That's a good thing to do, and try and just get some kind of equilibrium in terms of being symmetrical, you know, however you put your arms, and strengthening out the spine so you're not got your neck right back or right forward. So you do those things, but definitely it's difficult at first to think, this water is going to support me. And people tend to, if you think about when you're reading a book, when you're looking at a phone, whatever you're doing, particularly the phone thing, a lot of people are forward and down. And with floating, you're opening your shoulders out and you're letting your head go back. And people just tend to, even in bed, you've got a pillow there, so your head is a little higher. Your head's not going to be that high. You'll accept that and let your head just drift back into the water. It will support you. A lot of people think the water's going to come up past their eyes and go into their eyes. It won't. So once you've got that in your head, then physically relax into the water. So you've done the practicalities. You physically relax back into the water. The third bit is, okay, so I've done all that. I'm really comfortable. I'm starting to get it. What do I do with my mind now? Because my mind is going mental. It won't shut up because there's nothing else for it to do. I can hear my heart, like, I can hear every single breath. And I'm thinking about what I've got to do tomorrow, about whether or not my girlfriend's angry with me, about whether or not my boss is going to have a go at me next week because I've not got this assignment in on time, or whatever it is. So that is where mindfulness can come in. So there's a whole experience around floating, and it's not a meditation or mindfulness or a substitute for it. But if you know how to meditate, or if you at least know how to focus on the breath, which is probably a more basic form of meditation than watching your thoughts, that helps. So I just tell people, if your mind is racing, just start to count your breaths in and out from beginning to end. And if your mind starts to race again, just start to count your breaths again. And if your mind does go off and you're thinking about something and you're enjoying it, carry on. Don't necessarily, if you're uncomfortable doing that, just let your mind go. Because sometimes you could be an expert meditator who lies in the tank with no sensation and just focuses on the breath for an hour and you're in heaven. But I've gone in there sometimes at 6 o'clock in the morning when I've got a really busy day. Stressed out, thinking, what the fuck am I going to do today? I've got so much to do, this is impossible. And laying in the tank for 1 hour and come out and gone, no, it's not. I've just thought about it all. I've prioritized everything. I didn't have any other distractions. My phone wasn't ringing. I wasn't drinking a cup of coffee. I wasn't cleaning the float center. I wasn't talking to any staff. I wasn't trying to travel on the tube. You know, I wasn't doing any of those things. Cars weren't rushing past me. I was just in a tank organizing my mind.
The planning with because you had the sort of the peace and quiet to be able to do proper planning in there, I suppose.
So yes, exactly. And but then so there's really three sort of areas, I think. There's the let's get in here, let's just switch off and let's focus on a few key things that I want to organize in my life. Then there's the let's get in here and let's just really make a solid effort at meditating in here and being mindful the whole time, because it's a perfect environment to do that, I believe. Some people may say you can't feel your body, so you can't be present in your body, which brings a different angle to it. Be interesting to hear what you think on that. But then the third one is, people have gone in there and come out and said, I had a flashback to my childhood, or I was in this, it was in this crazy lucid dream, which I really enjoyed. There are times when you feel, you know, when you're in a dream and you feel like you're falling, there are times where you can get that sense in the float tank, but you're in control of it. Because if you don't want to do that, just come back to your breath, or just go back to your thinking about your to-do list and what you're going to do. But you can really switch off and let yourself go down that road, and you'll start to feel it if it happens. And you can choose. It's like anything, you can control. If you feel like anxious and your heart's pounding, you can take some deep breaths and you can bring yourself back. you know, people can do that. And it's the same with that, I believe, with the lucid dreaming thing. I sometimes really enjoy it. And when I come out, I feel incredibly spaced out and ready to go to bed. So it's an interesting tool. There is ways to use it. And the other thing I'd say is real quick, most recently, there's been loads of research on floating, and we're getting a document written up at the moment, which I'll share with you both, which is really interesting, which is all of the research that's ever been done on floating condensed into a 12-page briefing document, like a little journey through floating and what the fuck does it do, and who's talked about it in what areas. But the most recent research has been done by a guy called Justin Feinstein in Ohio, in the Laurier Institute of Brain Research, and he's got a lot of float tanks, and he's got an fMRI scanner, and he's doing, I believe they're called level one clinical trials, which I think means you have double blind placebos. They're that really high level research. Again, may have butchered that, but it is, they're the kind of things that are thrown around. I know it's very high quality research, and the result is that when you put someone in an fMRI scanner after a float versus someone who's not floated, who's just in a control room, which is a dark room on a chair lying back, you know, they can still feel the chair, they can still hear a few things, whatever. The person who's been in the float tank, their salience network, which is the network within the brain that is responsible for looking around the environment with all of your sensory cortices, deciding what is salient to pay attention to. The salience network, the level of activation in the salience network is just like through the floor.
Yeah.
It just switches off because all of your sensory cortices have nothing to do. So that, even if, whether you're meditating, whether you're thinking about your day, whether you're having a lucid dream and going on some kind of crazy trip to your childhood, whatever you're doing, your salience network doesn't have anything to do. And so it gets deactivated, and that is proven by an fMRI scanner. And the knock-on effect is that you produce less cortisol, which is obviously the stress response hormone. So that's the scientific bit. And then you've got people saying, well, my back pain's gone. Is that because they were gravity-free, or is that because of the salience network thing? I don't feel anxious anymore. Well, that probably is the salience network thing, because the salience network's highly activated in all sorts of mental health conditions, like, you know, depression, schizophrenia, anxiety. The salience network's key in all of those. There's two regions in the brain, the singular anterior cortex and another one, I can't remember them both. Basically, they're highly active in these patients that have these issues, and PTSD as well. So that's what it does scientifically, but then there's all of this knock-on effect stuff. Oh, I feel more creative, I feel more energetic, I feel like I can sleep better, I feel like I'm not as anxious, I feel like I can, you know, go out and take on the world. I feel positive again.
It's funny, the links to meditation, like if we were to like put mindfulness, meditation and floating and put the benefits like side by side,
they're the same.
They'd be very, you know, the crossover is insane.
It is.
Well, you know, because one thing that springs to mind is that during your daily life, you know, you never get really get any time to just sit with yourself. You're either grabbing a phone, or you're watching TV, or you're picking up the newspaper. When you get a few minutes, you use it to go and, you know, do one of the other tasks that you've got, you know, in the back of your mind. But what the floating allows you to do is, you know, once you get past that first 10, 15 minutes of, this is the usual way that I would think when I've got a bit of time to me. But then you cross into that territory, it's like in the UFC, you know, rounds 4 and 5, the championship rounds, right? Where you go into this, into this space to think, where you don't usually give it that amount of time. Like I said, we have 70,000 thoughts approximately every day. But once we let all those usual thoughts pass by, then you get used to the fact that you just you just sat here in this flotation chamber. You get closer to who you really are.
Yeah, I agree with you completely.
Because you're there, you're not having this, you know, like in that cartoon Inside Out, when you got that, you know, that the angry guy and the empathetic guy, and you got happiness, and you've got all these different voices and these thoughts that circulate. You know, once you're in there for 15, 20, 30 minutes, that quietens down.
Yeah, they almost run out of steam.
They run out of steam, right? Which you never give them space to do during the day, but in there. And then during that moment, that present moment, where you're not no longer lost in thought, it allows you to get these, you taste little, you know, little moments of being a lot more true to yourself. And then I think that's where that growth happens, and where you can really help to prioritize. That's where you can come out of it and say all that kind of surface stuff doesn't really matter as much, because you've been given that space to, you know, without the ego. Yeah. And that's why, you know, when I go in there specifically to meditate, where I'm actually noticing all the thoughts, I'm paying specific, particular attention to anytime something comes into my mind, like sending that email later on or having to call that guy. All of those thoughts that would usually come into my mind, I take a breath and watch them go. But doing it in this environment where you said, you know, the water, you don't know where your skin ends and the water begins, you can't hear or smell or see anything. So it's almost as if it's just the brain that is active. And so as you're sat there, it's a perfect environment for you to meditate, to do those concentration exercises. And then where you can, throughout that hour where you just, you know, you're focusing on the breath, can really get tastes of being in the present moment. And when you're all dark, it really begs that, you know, the...
And what they say, and this is a hypothesis rather than a fact,
yeah,
but people say, well, today your phone and your email and you're in particularly in London, you know, the tube, and, you know, you've got TV, and it's just non-stop. It's just, yeah, a barrage on your senses continually. So in prehistoric times, your salience network or whatever you want to call it, your fight flight, would spike up when you see a tiger and you climb a tree, and the tiger would lose interest and fuck off, and then your salience network would come back down and you might sleep for the rest of the day, and then it might spike up again later on when you go hunting. This is, again, there would be people out there who'd probably go, no, that's not right, but this is a hypothesis I've heard mentioned. Yeah. So just for the sake of conversation, because it's interesting. So that's where we, you know, evolutionary, this is where we get our cortisol, our spikes from, because we need it. It's adrenaline, it's getting us to do things. But like, I actually do feel like if I'm walking across, like, the float center's in Vauxhall, it's in a peaceful little courtyard, but Vauxhall is mental. Like that intersection with all those cars and the bus station. Like when I'm crossing that road, it's like horns going off. There's like a million people trying to cross at the same time. You know, there's people like walking into you, not looking where they're going, they're on their phone. I've got a few emails to answer on the way to work. I'm taking a few calls. My mind's racing.
There's like four traffic lights you've got to pass to cross over.
So, yeah, it's a terrible place.
Yeah.
And, you know, that isn't normal. But then once I get in the float centre, obviously I'm working in a particularly zen environment. But let's say you go into an office. All right, so you get into the office, you sit down, and you've got four colleagues sat in cubicles next to you, all talking at you straight away. You're on your computer answering emails, your boss is asking you for something, your phone's like ding, because you've got a message from your missus, or whatever it is, or she's got a message, she's on the other side of London in her office doing exactly the same thing, getting a message from her mister. Like, it's just, it is non-stop, and you're hyper-connected the whole time, and the expectations are huge, and so that cortisol is unnaturally just continually spiking. I think it's reasonable hypothesis, right? I mean, it makes sense.
The digital tool technology is to blame for it? Or?
And I think the digital technology and everyone living in a really condensed urban environment where there's millions of people living on top of each other and like everyone's got these expectations that you know, all that stuff. And the media as well, like adverts, constant adverts, all over billboards, all over the, like, I do hate it when I'm on the tube and I just find myself reading adverts. And I'm like, oh, I've just read like 10 fucking adverts in a row.
The same one, like...
Oh, over and over again.
Yeah, the one that's right in front of
you. Yeah, and you're like, oh, no.
Subconscious is, oh.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So it's all those things, I think.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it's bad. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying that it's great. It might be amazing for progress. You know, the idea of clustering where you've got all these businesses and people together and they all feed off each other and progress happens a lot quicker. Yeah. I'm not knocking it. I'm not saying, let's all go and live in, you know... So we'll go back to the forests and pad around barefoot and hunt animals. Or that might be awesome. But I'm saying that you need a counterbalance to it, which is why I think floating is so powerful, and meditation.
And looking back on the success that you've had and the life that you've lived, for you, what matters most in life?
Right now, it's just adventure. Right now. But I mean, my family and my friends matter the most. And then it's kind of like, right, so you've got a good family and you've got good friends, so you're very, very, very fucking lucky.
Yeah.
So that's, tick that off, and you're a very fortunate person. Make sure you enjoy that. Like, my sister's just had a little baby, so I've got a niece. And I probably 5-6 years ago, I'd have seen her once. I see her every opportunity. I'm always on the train back to Leicester or Bristol, wherever, to see her whenever I can.
It's people like you, you know, young and energetic, that are pioneering this kind of stuff, and it's, you know, ultimately having a positive effect on other people. And that's what we're all about, you know. It's just helping, being part of this network that helps to spread happiness.
Yeah, And congratulations on this studio. It's wicked.
Yeah, onwards and upwards from here.
Cool.
All right, thank you. Perfect. Nice one.
Nice one, man.
Yes, it's
cool.
Ez is the man.